folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson is, in the winter wonderland somewhere.
He's in California taking care of his cousin's cows.
Well, but the thing is, we don't care where Steve is, just like we don't care about pronouncing your name correctly. That was Klaus.
You're going to give it a shot?
I got Klaus Van Studerheim.
This is a running joke for anybody. For the last 3 years.
We just keep trying to squeeze more money out of them. But we have a wonderful, interesting show this morning. We have a topic that surfaces often, as well it should, because it impacts our livelihoods. And a lot of times, I think if you don't have the big picture like our guest does this morning, you don't always see it coming. You don't always see it happening. And I think it takes a step back. And so we're going to step back a little bit and talk about automation. We're talking about losing jobs to the engineering and to the inventions and to the kinds of things. Well, what are we going to talk about? Leanne, Bill Klaus is going to introduce you.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, Leanne. We're very excited to have you. Leanne is what is called a technology evangelist, which means she goes around the country and gives speeches and talks, I think, about the very same sort of thing that we're going to talk about today. Isn't that right, Leanne?
Yeah, I talk about a wide range of ways that technology is impacting our lives and our livelihoods and our future careers.
So why don't you give us a two-minute intro or so, and then we're going to bombard you with questions.
Sounds great. Thanks, Klaus. So my name is Leanne Reimel. As Klaus said, I'm a technology evangelist. So I've spent my whole career, my whole life focused on how people can build cool things with technology. And as sort of a side effect of that, the last few years, I've seen a lot front and center on what does that look like when people are building cool things with technology? What is the impact that has on our wider jobs ecosystem, on the workplace, on the future of work? And so I've been kind of living and breathing that for about the last 14 years or so. I live in Missoula, beautiful Missoula, Montana, where I'm also involved with Democratic politics. I serve on the board with Klaus of the Missoula County Democratic Central Committee, where we work really, really hard to elect Democrats in our beautiful purple state. So, and actually the last election cycle, 2018, I'm very proud to have worked quite a bit on Senator John Tester's campaign, knocking lots and lots of doors, talking to lots of voters, especially voters in rural western Montana, where, again, we're seeing, you know, front and center what the impact is on our changing economy, on the jobs that are available, the types of jobs that people are working, how that's impacting everyone's lives every single day. So I'm really excited to join y'all this morning for a conversation. I thank you, Klaus and Mike, for having me on. So I'm excited to get chatting.
Well, I'm really interested in the term technology evangelist. Does this mean, first of all, we have to send you a check, right?
No.
So anything that benefits
Democrats, I'll do for free. If it benefits Democrats in some ways, I'll do it for free. So I think you don't have to send me a check. However, technology evangelist, you know, it's my passion. It's my life. I've been working in tech since I was in high school. And I work for an organization, but I also spend all of my free time as well, often working with, like, tech education nonprofits, especially those that are working with underserved communities. How do we get more people entering the jobs economy that is growing, right? So we see the tech jobs economy is a growth economy. And so how do we try to help people skill up on the right skills to get jobs in the economies that are growing within the U.S. and wider, actually, with a global audience?
I have a member of my family that works for GoDaddy in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And he says they're desperate for technology people.
Yeah, and that's a story that a lot of major tech companies are finding. So we have, there's definitely a skills gap in technology that a lot of major organizations are working to solve. But, you know, one of the things we've seen, there's not necessarily everyone who was, you know, working in mines in Virginia is going to be provided the right programs and retraining and is in the right place in their lives to be retrained to become a developer.
Well, this
right?
is America, so they're not going to get any retraining. Then that's the problem. We're talking, I don't know, 40% of the jobs today didn't exist when I was looking for, when I was more active in the workforce. And because their technology jobs or their whatever it is changes in automation, and yet I don't see any retraining. Am I missing something? Are you guys planning something that the rest of us don't know about for retraining?
So I mean, I think that there's a few things happening. There's streams of training programs and pathways to tech jobs that are absolutely being created, but there's also And that is a real thing that's being created to try to build pathways, especially for people that maybe are in communities that previously were not served by pathways into tech. So if you didn't, you know, work down the street from someone in tech, if you didn't go to a school where people had technology programs, so those pathways are being created. However, there's also concurrently an increase in the jobs that are being automated away, and those are not being replaced quickly enough.
So let's talk about that. What kind of jobs are disappearing at what rate? I mean, I always think of self-driving cars, right? You don't need truck drivers. Mm-hmm. You're going to have much fewer accidents. So the hospitals will have fewer patients. Cars will drive, as I understand, 6 inches apart from one another. Which means that you don't really need to widen the highways anymore. I mean, that's just one example. Can you talk about what kind of jobs are disappearing at what rate and, you know, what does it look 10 years from now? Is this going to happen relatively quickly now as, you know, the speed of technology keeps increasing on a steep up curve or is it a more flat curve?
Right. So just to dive in a little bit to what you just mentioned with driving, I think that's something like driving alone, just to talk about that for a workspace, right? It's not just about our convenience when we're going to the grocery store, right? If we have a self-driving car someday, this is great. This is so much safer. You're going to reduce the issues with distracted driving, a lot more efficiency on the highways, all of those pieces, right? That impacts us as individuals. However, there's, you know, millions of Americans who drive as their job, as their livelihood. There's a number of states where being a truck driver is one of the most prevalent areas of employment for men. And we can anticipate that 2 to 3 million Americans who drive for work are going to lose their jobs in the next 10 years. And when you ask about the pace at which that's happening, there's the term, and it's very cliche, but there's a reason because it's very applicable to many scenarios, and it's boiling the frog. And the loss of jobs to, for example, driving automation technology isn't something that's going to happen overnight. We're not going to go to sleep on, you know, December 31st on, you know, 2022 and wake up the next morning and that's it. Everyone's out of work. It'll happen through a decrease in an efficiency of that work and a decrease of the need for individual humans to do the work.
Let me ask you this. In this little town of 12,000, we probably have 500 people directly employed by the Jeep, by tour industry, by driving tours. And I don't know how many more ancillary jobs are we going to automate tours like Jeep tours or bus tours?
I mean, likely there's going to be elements of automation. I think, you know, I think a lot of people, especially maybe sci-fi movies, have made us believe this, like the robots are coming, right? And it's going to be this, we're kind of waiting for this dramatic robot apocalypse event where all of a sudden there's no humans working in the grocery store or there's no humans driving trucks. But it's actually something that we've been seeing happen. It's just happening slowly. That's that boiling the frog piece. So, for example, if you go to the grocery store, we've all seen the checkout kiosks of the grocery store, right? The self-checkout. That is an example of a decreased need in human labor because we're adding efficiencies with automation, with AI. We're adding those efficiencies through those robots, basically, which is the checkout machine, those kiosks. And that means that there is less checkers that are needed to be employed by that grocery store or by that retail outlet.
Let me interrupt right here and ask. I know people, and I'm one of them, that intentionally don't go to self-checkout because I want to keep people working. Will that have any impact, or are we just sort of fooling ourselves by not going through the self-checkout line?
I'm the exact opposite, Mike. I go to the self-checkout because it's faster and easier.
Why am I not surprised?
I think that it's an honorable goal to do that. However, I think that this is not a ship that's going to be turned around. Like the fourth industrial revolution won't be stopped by, you know, individual consumer choices, because most of us are not, as consumers, we're not in positions of power to make choices that meaningfully change the pace of change, right? So what I mean is, yes, as an individual, you can go to the store, you can say, I'm going to choose to engage with the checkout agent and maybe even like write a review and say, I really appreciate having a human interaction here. That when you call into your cell phone provider or when you call into any service center, the likelihood is you're going to be routed through some sort of AI call system. You don't have a choice about how you're engaging. So the majority of the time when you're shopping at that grocery store, likely there's automated or will be automated scanning of inventory and restocking that's happened. You don't have a choice as a consumer about how you're engaging there. So it's an honorable goal. However, because these are choices and efficiencies, you know, capitalism is the pursuit of efficiency and greater gains, right? And so we're seeing all of our major organizations, all of our major companies, in order to stay alive, right, and in order to increase their profits, they're always going to be pursuing efficiencies. So we don't really have consumer choice there.
Well, I understand. That's very honest of you, and I appreciate that. I'm fooling myself, and so are the others that are not using the self-checkout. On the other hand, the idea of having no choice, in other words, we are powerless. I go to Home Depot, all I'm going to have is self-checkouts. I go to Walmart, all I'm going to have is self-checkouts. I won't have the choice of a human to is what you're saying, and that's going to go on and on down the line. Do you foresee? Let's talk a little bit before we talk about backlash, human backlash. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little more about what other fields, what other jobs are seem to be going away or have gone away and we haven't noticed.
Yeah, let me ask you. Let me add to that question, because I was thinking about that also. Factories now make cars more efficiently by robots and much more accurately than robots than humans could be, and I read somewhere that it's not going to stop there, but that we're going to have robotic surgeons who are going to be much more precise than human surgeons. Do you think that's possible?
Absolutely. We already are seeing it actually in medicine, with diagnostic medicine, that for using AI, using machine learning and AI for diagnostic purposes. So if someone comes in and they say, you know, I've got A, B, and C symptoms, here's their test results and where they fall against baseline, there's already faster and more accurate designation of what could be of diagnostic power than. Now, that's not to say a robot's going to be a better doctor than your doctor. There's a lot of other factors there. However, I think what we're seeing is it's not going to necessarily be there's no more doctors, right? That's not a realistic future. But you know, what McKinsey said, for example, McKinsey did a big study on this a couple years ago, in the future of work and automation in the labor force. And we're seeing in those types of skills-based labor, about 30% of their duties will be replaced like 30% of the things that they need to know. Now, some of that is really great, right? Like I have to file expense reports, for example, for my job as part of my job. I would love for that to be completely automated away. That's a thing that's not meaningful for me to do, in my opinion. I hate expense reports. Now, that also means that you can do more with less people. So there's going to be a lot of fields where we see, some fields where we see just the type of work they're doing changing. So maybe you have the same number of physicians on a team and they are able to do more elevated or different types of work because the kind of baseline diagnostic needs are removed, right? Maybe the field of possible causes is narrowed. However, there's also a lot of workplace scenarios where instead of a team of 10 skilled professionals, maybe you only need 7, right? So I think that there's going to be a few different ways that that shows up. But a lot of the jobs, you know, Klaus, you mentioned car manufacturing. We've already seen it. Like we've already been as Americans on the front line because there was 4 million manufacturing jobs that were automated away in the last, you know, 17 or 18 years since 2000. And that's a very significant kind of corner of the population. It's predominantly male roles, or predominantly men held those jobs. A lot in the Midwest, so a lot in, you know, Ohio, Wisconsin. These states might be states that are ringing a bell of importance to our political climate. So a lot of those states, we see those manufacturing jobs that were replaced by automation. And so that doesn't mean that all the plants shut down necessarily, but a lot of them, it means that maybe instead of 100 workers, they needed 20 workers because instead of people, you know, attaching a door to a vehicle, a robot did that and they had a QA engineer that was checking that step on the line, right? Which meant maybe you need less people, maybe they had to work less hours. So.
So while you guys are looking at these spreadsheets and you're looking at, okay, you know, we got 500 people working here. We can reduce that to 25 and we're going to save all of this money because the machines are going to cost this much and it's going to cost this much to repair them and this much to maintain them. So we're going to save money by getting rid of 475 people and all the messiness that goes with that, the sick leave and the health care. Machines don't want health care, apparently. Mm-hmm. But. I don't. Are they reinvesting the money in training programs, Leanne? Are they saying, okay, this assembly line, or we make cement here. We have about 100 people, 125 people employed at a cement plant. Around here, that's a big employer. But more and more of that's being automated, I'm guessing, as time goes by. We already talked about driving. In your spreadsheet perusal in your grand offices or somewhere, where's the retraining programs? How are these people going to, or don't we care about them? They should all go work. So I was making $22 an hour in a factory in Ohio, and now I'm making $8.95 at Walmart.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we should care about them, right? I mean, that's morally, and to have a just and balanced society, we should care about people. But, you know, most, not to throw all of our major companies in the U.S. under the bus, but generally not. Generally, what it looks like is either layoffs or not backfilling for positions as those positions have been eliminated. So even if you see a company that's not necessarily doing major layoffs, if you look at pretty much any manufacturing or many manufacturing companies, especially through the Midwest, likely they're increasing efficiency. So as people retire, for example, they're not filling those positions. So I think that there are some retraining programs that are happening, but in no way near the scale. And frankly, why would a major company be, they're not financially incented. Like, where's their financial incentive to do a retraining program? There's a moral incentive. But there's not a strong financial incentive to.
Well, where would the financial incentive come from? Maybe government?
Well, that's the only place it can come from, right? I mean, because the companies are not going to do it. So it is really the role of the public sector, the same way that, you know, they force us to go to school.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. I think there is one of the ideas that's very popular where I work in Silicon Valley, around people who have been working in this space for 10, 20 years. And I think we've been maybe more aware or seeing it really up close and seeing kind of what the potential future is going to be of the pace at which jobs are being replaced by automation and replaced by AI. An idea that's very popular, or you hear about quite a bit when we discuss automation and jobs, is universal basic income. And because I have not seen, and maybe there is one, maybe someone is working on one right now, and we're going to hear about it, it's going to be great, but I have not seen a really compelling path to force the private sector to care about the humanity of individuals in our country.
So the heartless Silicon Valley.
We're not going to have. Go ahead.
Just like the rest of the heartless corporate America, they are interested in profit and not in human capital or the bottom line matters. Humans don't. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So tell us if you can, Leanne. We're talking to Leanne. We're talking about automation, and even this is a little bit of a manipulation. We've done other shows on artificial intelligence. We're throwing the initials around AI a lot when we're talking about artificial intelligence, and that's certainly been a lot of movies that have been fantastic, and certainly a lot of discussion. The robots are coming. The singularity is going to take over. Will they have hearts and souls? It's a very popular theme in TV and movies. We chuckle, but what we're talking about here this morning with Leanne is the reality of losing your job. So Klaus had a conversation, or at least a post that, about the show this morning, where we talk about artificial intelligence and automation and losing jobs, or at least jobs, and maybe creating jobs. So let's talk about the other side a little bit. There's got to be some creation here. And somebody's got to make those machines that are replacing these thousands of people. And
other machines.
And plumbers. You know, he had a post that said, they're not going to replace plumbers. And somebody told me they're not going to replace hotel maids because we haven't found a good way to make a machine to make a bed yet. Is any of that true?
Well, I mean, yes, we don't have a machine to make a bed yet. However, we have machines that wash the sheets. We have machines that tell us what rooms have been cleaned or not, right? Like, there's definitely spaces, even in hospitality, for example, where automation is making us better at our jobs. And automation is a thing that I think it can, provided we respond to it correctly as a society and we respond to it in a serious way with serious public policy, automation is something that can have really positive social implications. Right, it can free up mental space. It can free up actual time. It can allow us to do more elevated work, more elevated research. It can allow us to, focus on the arts. Right, there's some really kind of utopian futures that you can imagine that aren't really that far off. If we choose to respond to it as a society by making adjustments to account for it. So I mean, automation is. I work on automation projects. I've worked on large-scale automation projects in the Midwest. Automation's not a bad thing, but it's a thing that we have to understand and we have to think about when we're crafting public policy, because it is drastically changing our workforce, and it will only increase the pace at which it drastically changes our workforce.
And that's my point. Nobody's thinking about it, and so I'm asking you and your buds to get people to think about it. Why you're doing the spreadsheets, why you're showing them the utopian world that we're going to create, because Carl Sandburg did a wonderful poem about this 100 years ago, about if I only had more time, because these guys are working 12, 14 hours a day in sweatshops in Chicago, and the poem went, if I only had more time, I could do so, I could create art. If I only had more time, I could do all of these things. And here we are 100 years later, and you're telling us, we're going to give you the time. We're going to take this, instead of trading your valuable time for hourly wages, we're going to get machines to do this stuff, and you're going to have the time. But I don't see, I see I'm making you the villain here, by the way, Lee, if you haven't caught that yet. Nice thing to do. It's a nice person that's come on our radio show.
He does that all the time.
But you guys are doing these wonderful things, technological things, and you're evangelizing the idea of replacing people with AI and with automation. But I don't see that you've done the work for public policy, as you just said brilliantly, by the way. I'm going to give you some credit. When you're crafting public policy, what we got is a guy that just said, I'm going to bring manufacturing back, and you're telling me manufacturing's not coming back. Everybody knows that.
Well, the plants are coming back. They're just not employing very many people. I read a number somewhere, and tell me if this is anywhere near true, if you know, that in 10 or 15 years, 40% of the now existing jobs will have disappeared. Is that just somebody saying something, or is there any evidence that's a true number?
There's evidence behind that. There's a number of studies, right, where this is something that we're looking at in a number of organizations they're looking at. But one of the kind of premier studies on it, or that people reference often, is a 2017 report by McKinsey. And they said that as many as one-third of American jobs may disappear because of automation. So that was a pretty straightforward assessment. That doesn't mean that every sector, right? There's going to be sectors that grow. There's going to be sectors that are not impacted yet, but if we look at it, we have to have a holistic view of the country as a whole, and also all of the related and dependent sectors. So, like, when we talk about
not just the country, right? I mean, this is a global phenomenon.
There's a global phenomenon, absolutely. When we talk about, but to think about, for example, in the U.S., like small towns in the U.S., right? We talk a lot about small towns in the U.S. when we talk about politics, because it's just the nature of political conversations. And think about those truck drivers. So if we go back to the 2 to 3 million Americans who are targeted to lose their jobs within the next 10 years, who drive for work, who are drivers, truck drivers, it's not just truck drivers that will be losing their jobs, which is still a significant number. It's the truck stops that are dependent on that business. It's the, if you've ever driven cross country, so I live in Montana. When I moved from Chicago to Montana, I drove. So I drove 90, you know, for a couple of days. And there's small towns across that entire, that's an interstate highway that is used primarily for trucking and for logistics, for moving goods. And there's countless, you know, truck stop towns where that entire mini economy there is based around the human needs of truck drivers, right? To pull over, to eat, to sleep, to shower, to stay the night. Like, so those are also the cascading effects of individual economies being impacted by automation. It's not just those individual roles. It's also, what about, if you're in a town where the primary employer is Walmart, and Walmart's the primary employer for the majority of rural states in this country, and you look at those states and those towns and those counties, and as they're removing the need for checkout people, right, and people who are working there, humans who are working there, then what about the grocery stores that those humans shop at? What about the human needs that those people who work there have? Those are also related industries that are going to be impacted as well. So even if, you know, we will always have a need for, if you were to say, like, restaurant servers, right? If you're saying, here's the restaurant servers are not yet going to be automated. Well,
actually, there were restaurants in the old times that were semi-automated, right? But they went away. But I suspect you're about to tell us they're coming back.
Well, no, just to, when we think about, like, will my job be impacted? Right, I think that's a question we keep coming back to. Mike brought that up. Like, will my job be impacted by automation? Say you're a server, right? Being a server may not be a role that's immediately, you know, on the kind of top 10 list of being impacted directly by automation. However, if you're a server somewhere where a majority of your clientele or a portion of your clientele works in retail, works as drivers, right, then that will end up impacting you. As those roles are decreasing, that means that your clientele is going to be impacted, that your business is going to be impacted. So I think that there's cascading impacts that we're going to experience that are beyond just, and not to minimize it, like beyond the impact on individuals whose job may be impacted. It's also, what about, you know, we're an interrelated economy, right? What about everyone else that they deal with their money?
Well, hospitals will have much fewer patients, right? Because a lot of hospital admissions are due to traffic accidents.
Well, there is. I mean, there's a really, with automated driving, I mean, it is very exciting for truck driver safety, right? I mean, it's a driving safety, highway safety. I mean, there's huge safety implications that are car accidents are one of the leading killers in this country. Like, so it's not that it's a bad thing, but it's a thing that we have to think about and plan for.
What have you thought further than this? I mean, what happens in society? The companies, as Mike pointed out, are not retraining people, and governments at best are making a half-hearted attempt. What will actually happen? Are we going to have a whole section of unemployed, dissatisfied, unhappy people?
Well, I think we already do. I mean, I would argue if you look at the underemployment rates and the labor market participation rates, like, I think we already are. You look at what's happening in the Midwest, you look at the increase in morbidity among, you know, the segment of the population that is most impacted so far by automation, which is, you know, men in the Midwest, and we look at the all of the numbers are pointing us to that. That's already happening. There's already underemployment, lack of access to jobs, deaths of despair are increasing. Like, these are all things that are interrelated when we think about, again, when we think about how to craft public policy. We have to take into account what it's already looking like, and with the pace at which it's increasing, how do we try to turn that ship around? Right? And I don't know. I believe that retraining programs are important. I think we should absolutely invest in retraining programs. I think that there won't be a new, and McKinsey says there won't be enough new jobs created to outpace
the
number of jobs lost. So retraining is incredibly important to try to stabilize labor market participation, but I think also this is where the social safety net programs become more and more important. We have this, we've got one piece of the puzzle, which is we are using science and technology to reduce the need for human labor, right? Isn't that like every major advancement we've made as humans, right? Like, this is exactly the key that we're always looking for. How do we reduce the need for, you know, backbreaking human labor? How do we reduce the need for menial human labor or for things that can automate away, you know, elements that should be automated? A robot should be able to do this, right? How do we create that automation? But the second piece is, how do we then ensure that no one gets left behind?
What I'm interested in right now is construction industry. We've covered drivers and all the driving related, especially truck drivers. We covered retail checkout. We covered robots. You know, and these are things we've seen and we've seen coming. And we got, so what aren't we seeing coming? And I'm especially interested in the construction trades. I had a concrete saw. I was cutting a hole in my garage floor to put in a bathroom. I would love to have that. You talked about backbreaking work. Yes, ma'am. Backbreaking work. I would love to have that automated. So point is, when you guys sit around, what aren't we seeing? What's going to be, what sectors or what jobs are going to be lost next?
Mm-hmm. So there's, construction's interesting because construction is, there's a large number of unfilled positions in construction. So it's actually, construction has actually very low growth so far in kind of efficiency changes. So basically, not that much has changed so far with construction. It's primarily manual labor processes. There's not, so it means that it hasn't yet been that impacted, but it means it's ripe to be impacted. So in the capital driver there with construction is that this large number of unfilled roles. So I think the on the McKinsey report, if I'm remembering correctly, and I have to go back and check, but it was maybe like a 250,000 or 200,000 jobs were unfulfilled. So they had a large number of open jobs in construction. But there's a really big demand for workers, which is a good motivation to create technology to become more efficient, right? If you don't have enough people to do the work. I think what we're going to see in construction is definitely disruption from robotics. I think that lower operating costs with more robotics. So, again, we talked about something as simple as restocking, doing inventory analysis, things like that. Those are all these kind of small ways where you'll have lower operating costs in construction. I think that we'll also see, again, similar as other industries, but repeatable tasks. So things that can be done. So maybe bricklaying, for example, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a bricklaying robot, right? And so that's exponentially more efficient than human bricklayers. And so I think we're going to see for those repeatable tasks more and more kind of automation. And we see, you know, with like large machinery, for example,
right.
One of the ways that we see just technology impacting is like we're able to keep our machinery running longer and more efficiently when we have the Internet of Things and connected devices and able to track efficiency of that machinery. And so I think that that's, you know, now someday it's arguable that there would be more wearables and augmentation. So imagine like those, have you ever seen one of those presentations of someone like wearing an AI helmet and the gloves and like doing minute, doing fine tasks? There's an argument that like in industries like construction, for example, that are very prone to workplace injury, there's going to be a tipping point where it's much cheaper to invest in like a wearable exoskeleton work augmentation where you can like wear an outfit, like similar to what we see in video games, right? Like you can wear the outfit, you're doing the things, the motions, and there's a robot actually enacting those movements in a work site because it's so much safer, right? Like if there's a workplace incident, it's like a robot that's potentially damaged, not a human body.
And absolutely. So there's nothing more dangerous than a nail gun.
Yes. Nail guns are very scary. And so I think that those are the spaces that we'll see, some of, and it's, again, it's a good, like, dangerous task, like having wearable augmentation for dangerous tasks. Like, that's safer for workers. Like, that's safer for people.
No,
it
that's
also does save companies a lot of money.
I read an article in the, I think it was even in the Missoulian, that talked about the giant 3D printer that, quote, printed houses in 24 or 48 hours. Is that some sort of fluke that somebody did, or is that coming? Do you know anything about that?
No, I think that using tools like 3D printing is absolutely, like when we talk about the devices and the robotics that are going to help us be more efficient, like 3D printing is absolutely in that category. Being able to scan and replicate parts. I mean, even like we have a cousin who's off with his wife and his family living on a sailboat somewhere right now, and he's an engineer, and he runs an engineering company in the Midwest, and that's what he does. And he's taking time off, and he's on this boat, and one of the things that he does is prints, if there's a piece that he needs for the boat or one of his friends needs for the boat, he prints it on the 3D printer. Huh. And so there's this, I mean, it's kind of amazing, right? Like you can find these open source images and or CAD designs and use them to print and to replace things both as, you know, individual consumers, but also on a larger scale, like with the 3D printing of houses, 3D printing, working 3D printing in medicine. I mean, there's incredible technology advances, but yeah, it's faster and more efficient, right, than maybe the ways we created things before.
Well, tell us, pretend we're a seminar at in Chicago or San Francisco, and you're just about to tell us you're going to speak to us about AI and automation. What are you going to tell us?
I think that for individual people, I think that it's absolutely the time to pursue skills and spaces that won't be readily replaced. So I think that pursuing the technology sector is growing. Pursuing jobs in technology, it's a good path forward right now. Pursuing learnings in technology, whether that's like online trainings or digital boot camps, that's a sector that's growing.
Well, let's emphasize that. Where am I going to get this training for these technology jobs? And you're saying online, digital boot camps, and these kinds of things are a way of as you said earlier in the show, creating pathways. If your job is getting automated out of existence, then, and this is America, you need to find your own pathway to the next job.
I think for individuals, like if I was speaking to individual people, right? It's how can you try to, you know, future-proof your career? Because we should all, I think about that constantly. Like, how am I future-proofing my skills, my role, my career? And I think, you know, there's a lot of great online sources that have free training. Like Coursera has a number of really great free professional certification courses. Like Google technology support, other kinds of spaces and technology. I think, you know, it's important what's tough with those pathways is often they're not that visible to a lot of people, right? So I think the more that we make them visible, and like this is a job, you don't have to go to school for computer science. Most of the people I work in high tech, most of the people I work with don't have degrees in computer science. A lot of the people that I work with in the communities I work with don't have college degrees, and they have good jobs in technology as technology professionals. So I think that the more that we can make that visible and help people, you know, see that this is a pathway that's open to them. The rules have changed a lot in the last 10 years on who works in tech. I mean, when I started working in tech, it was everyone had to have an MBA to do this specific type of work I'm doing. And now that's just not the case. It's more about on-the-job training. It's more about your experience. It's more about your self-taught skills. So I think that's one major piece is, you know, thinking about.
So that whole industry, that whole old paradigm of like you said, going to college, getting your computer science. There's lots of other pathways to the new jobs. That whether it's on the job or all the other things that you just mentioned, and those are the things to look out for, and those are the things to take advantage of if you're in the job market now or entering it, and those kinds of things.
And I think that's
go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that that's what we can do as individuals and for our community to help people future-proof their careers. I also think though that it's important that we acknowledge and we don't deny the interrelatedness between the public policy decisions we're going to make, the policies that we vote for, and how those relate to the future of work for most people in this country. So as...
I'm sorry. We're talking to Leanne Rimmel, our expert this morning on AI and automation, and we're running out of time. I want to thank Leanne Rimmel from all the way from Montana for calling in this morning, and her secret high tech job somewhere in California, which we're not allowed to talk about. We want to thank folks. Don't forget, you can catch this at bvid.org. bvid.org has the podcasts.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.